Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is a returning guest. You'll have to cast your mind back many years to remember the episode where John Maltz joined me. John, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I was very excited to get your message.
Well, as everyone should be when they get a message from me. That's what I say. Before we delve into how great I am, because really that's what this podcast is about, tell people about yourself, John.
I'm a freelance writer. I write for some places you may have heard of, such as Macworld. I also do some podcasts, Turning This Car Around, which is a parenting podcast, and The Rebound, which is a technology podcast.
You, John, are a lucky man because you got one of the rarest things that one can get on Random Trek. I think technically the rarest thing you can get is one of the movies. But second to that is an original series episode.
Yay.
Which is crazy because there aren't that many of them. We got even the rarer first season episode. I don't know why I'm building this up as people don't know what episode we're going to talk about. What Are Little Girls Made Of is the episode we're going to talk about, which is probably most famous for perhaps two things. Rock, the character Rock, and a certain rock shape that appears
exactly
in the episode. That is unfortunate.
Which I did not, did not notice as a child. and I only saw it, because there was a Flickr, back when Flickr was much more popular than Instagram. There was a great Flickr account of someone who was posting old stills from Star Trek, the original series. And that was one of them, was like her standing there and with that thing. And sure enough, the minute I saw it, I was like, oh my God, how did I miss that as a kid? I don't
even know. Yeah. My question is, how did they miss it as they were making this show?
Maybe they didn't.
Well, that is the only theory I think that checks out, is that they are just like, whatever.
I don't know if they had, it's like it is early in the first season, so I don't know if they had gotten to know Shatner that well yet. And maybe, but you'd think that, like, if it had been later in the run of the show, that might have been pretty obvious. Like,
yes,
here you go, Bill. Here's your prop.
But before we jump into episode details, let's talk about the original series in general and your thoughts about it. What do you think of the original series? Is it your favorite Star Trek? Is it, where does it come in?
I go back and forth a little bit between that and The Next Generation. I mean, as a kid, it's what I grew up on, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the thing that I identified with the most. And I watched it pretty much every day because it was on at 6 o'clock in the New York sort of metropolitan area. I grew up in Connecticut, and we got the New York stations. And so my mom would make dinner, and my brothers and I would sit down, and she'd turn on Star Trek, and we watched Star Trek for an hour. And then my dad would come home, and my parents would have dinner after Star Trek was over. So that was like my bread and butter as a kid. But I think, now I feel like there's a lot more of The Next Generation, and I think, the later seasons, after season two anyway, are very good. And I last fall, I went back and rewatched all of the original series, which I hadn't done quite some time. And there were some real ups and downs.
That's a roller coaster
ride.
There are
some good episodes and there are some really bad episodes.
Yes.
I'm not sure I can pick between the two of them necessarily.
I can't make you pick. So I won't. because I'm a nice guy like that. I agree with you though. I mean, I love the original series as well. And I often feel like as I'm rewatching them for Random Trek that, I've had this discussion with people before, that some episodes of the original series, you feel like they just could have made them today and it would work perfectly fine. And some episodes of the original series really show that it's, 60 years old, and it just would not fly. Mm-hmm. The pacing is different. It just is kind of some of the episodes, I'm going to say it, people, don't send me letters. I'm going to say it. Some of these episodes are boring. I happen to think that what our little girl's made of, while I think the title is probably problematic, I think it's a pretty good episode.
And I think so too.
I was not.
That's bored. Why I was. That was one of the reasons why I was so excited, because you had told me which episode it was. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so this is going to thumbs up. This one, I feel like, falls into the camp of, with some prop changes and some perhaps some costume changes.
Yeah.
Well, depending on where it's airing, it could be, it could have been a show that someone had written yesterday for a science fiction show that would air today. There would be, I think, a little fewer scenes of in the beginning where they're, you know, cautiously walking down the corridor in the caverns. They might have tightened that up a bit. But overall, I think it's pretty good. The pacing's kind of spot on.
Yeah.
If you ask me. But it's my podcast, so I ask myself. and this is one where I watch it. I watch the HD restored version. So once again, if you're watching the original series, you should watch the restored versions. A shout out for the Blu-rays, because they're great. And you can watch them with the original special effects or the fancy special effects, if you like.
And do you have a preference? You've probably answered this question before on the show.
I prefer, actually, the fancy, gussied up special effects, because...
You know, I kind of like them too, and I feel like that's wrong. Like, I shouldn't, because, you know, I hate what Lucas did to the Star Wars stuff, obviously, going back and redoing all that stuff. That was terrible.
Yes.
But for some reason, I feel like this works, because they're not going overboard with it.
Right. I think they're being very respectful of the material. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's really in keeping. And this episode in particular doesn't have a whole lot of special effects, so it's not bad. And I think the model of the Enterprise that they use is great.
Yeah.
So that's
it's
really
tasteful.
Helps.
It doesn't add like a, or it's not, it doesn't, it's not like they put, took the Enterprise from the new movies and put it in or something like that. It's basically the same model, just in 3D.
Mm-hmm. It looks great, and I say hooray for the special effects. And what they could have done, I guess they could have went crazy like George Lucas. The problem with George Lucas, I mean, I don't know anything about George Lucas. He seems, I'm sure he's a lovely man. He gives lots of money to charity. But I don't think he could help himself when he just couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And nobody could tell him, hey, George.
Right. And no one was saying no.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you shouldn't do that. And so, you know, there's this time-worn idea that constraint breeds creativity. And when you have unlimited power and unlimited money, because that's basically what George Lucas has, right? He could do whatever he wants, and didn't turn out well. Poor George Lucas. Yeah, right. He's crying himself on his billions and billions of dollars.
That's why Star Wars had to be taken away from him with lots of money.
That's right. They said, here, George, we'll give you a lot of money. You go build a museum somewhere in Los Angeles, I think, wherever he's building his museum. So this episode, we've already, spoiler alert, we think it's good. This episode has some interesting features to it. According to my favorite Star Trek website, Memory Alpha, it tells me that this is the first episode in which a red shirt dies. Two of them, in fact, spoiler alert, don't get attached to those
too.
Characters. they don't last very long. they live up to their red shirtedness. And there's like, everybody's an android. Spoiler alert. Lots of androids in this episode.
But it leads, which leads up to a great, you know, not a penultimate line almost.
Yes.
At the end. We don't want to jump ahead.
Yes. And the other interesting thing to note, which I did not notice as I was watching this episode, I've seen this episode many times, but I rewatched it as I was at the gym today. And I did not notice this, but Scotty, McCoy, Sulu, not in it. And I don't think Chekhov's in the first season, right?
Right.
So he wouldn't be in it anyway.
He's not in the first season, yeah.
So I don't know why they're not in it, but they're not. So maybe they're off doing something else.
Yeah.
And this is all about Nurse Chapel, really.
Yeah. And I think I'm assuming it's her first appearance. I didn't go back and check that, actually. I mean, other than the pilot, the original pilot.
Right.
And
she wasn't playing.
She was playing somebody else.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the first episode with Nurse Chapel or not.
Yeah. Sure. And maybe this is just her backstory. So, because it starts out talking about how she signed on to the ship in order to go find Roger Corby.
Right. Her fiance. who has been lost for, what, 5 years on this planet? Mm-hmm. Because he is a celebrated medical archaeologist?
Medical archaeologist,
something like that.
Yeah.
And then
the Louis Pasteur of medical archaeology
of ancient civilizations, which seems so strange to me.
That was a very strange, very strange line. But anyway,
and then I thought it was even strange. I was like, okay, I can accept this. And then Captain Kirk is like, oh, yes, everybody in Starfleet at the Academy had to read about him. And I was like, what? Really? It seems like a super niche, specialized thing that not everybody would have to read about.
I guess you go to Starfleet Academy for 9 years.
It's very comprehensive, the curriculum. You never know. A Starfleet officer, you'll never know when you might need something.
Unless you're in one of the J.J. Abrams movies, in which case you go to Starfleet Academy for like 2 months.
Oh, and then they give you a ship. Yeah. Get out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then you're captain.
That's right. But he's a big deal, is what they're trying to tell us. This guy. People know him. Roger Corby. He's the real deal. He knows what he's talking about. And he's been lost on this icy planet. No one knows where he is. Two expeditions have looked for him, and they have not found him. They don't mention that he has anybody else. It's just Dr. Corby, although we find out there are other people with him. And an interesting kind of role reversal. There's Nurse Chapel kind of standing next to Captain Kirk, and they're orbiting the planet. And Captain Kirk is like, hey, Spock, can you find anything on the planet? And Spock's like, I don't know. And Nurse Chapel's like, gee, I'm really worried about Roger Corby, but I know he's alive. And Captain Kirk is basically like, he's probably dead.
Yeah,
and you're like, come on, maybe a little softer, Captain Kirk. And then he talks to Spock. He like walks away to talk to Spock. And Nurse Chapel is standing right there.
Guys, totally dead, right? And Spock's like, yeah, guys, totally dead.
Yes. And I'm like, guys, Nurse Chapel is right. She can hear
right
you.
There.
Maybe even just whisper a little. But nope, they're like, this guy, he's dead. And they're hailing Uhura in her, I think the only thing she does in this episode is in this beginning kind of stinger, she hails the planet, no response. There's more of Captain Kirk assuring Nurse Chapel that this guy is totally dead. And then suddenly, shockingly, he hails the Enterprise and he's like, I'm totes fine, everybody, but you need to beam down. But just yourself, Captain Kirk, I only want you, Captain Kirk. And Captain Kirk doesn't think this is weird, really, for some reason. But he's like, I got a surprise for you. You'll probably want me to bring somebody else. And Nurse Chapel says, hey, I'm here. And there's an odd, although they don't ever really explain it. But she's like, oh, Roger. And there's a pause. And he says, oh, Christine. And they're very excited. And so they beam down. Everybody's happy. There is an odd moment. Now, here, I can't tell.
Yeah.
I'm not a woman, so I should put that out there. So I don't know. This is one of those things that I don't know if it's an appropriate kind of nice touch or if it's a sexist thing that should not be done. But they are leaving. Clearly, Nurse Chapel is very emotional. And there is a little moment where Uhura gets up and kind of hugs and kisses Nurse Chapel.
On the cheek, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if it's supposed
to
be.
There's a couple of weird things that they throw in there to try and make it seem like, oh, it's so happy because she's going to be back together with her. Because in the background, as she's talking to Corby on, you know, whatever, the intercom, there's a couple standing behind them. like there's a guy in like a jumpsuit guy and then a
miniskirt lady,
you know, yeoman, and the two of them are like standing very close as if they're a couple or something. And they're both smiling these big sappy smiles and they never say anything, but they're standing there to look happy. And then, yeah, they start leaving. And then, Uhura jumps up and hugs her.
Yeah. So I didn't know. It just struck me as odd. I didn't think it was bad. And I wondered if other people, how
it's
that
like
would
now
read.
Those things seem forced. Both of those things seem really forced to me.
And there are lots of, it's interesting. There are a couple of zooms in the beginning. They zoom in on the intercom, basically when Roger Corby's voice is coming in, and they quickly zoom in to Nurse Chapel's face, I guess to point out to the audience that this is her fiance. And so she's emotional. Just seemed kind of weird. I was like, we could pick up on that. Because you just spent 2 minutes telling us that he's been gone for 5 years. So, but they, so they, hooray, they found Roger Corby. He's like, okay, just beam down. You can bring Nurse Chapel, but just you and Nurse Chapel. Captain Kirk says, okay, that's cool. Beams down to the location. We find out that there's this network of caverns and tunnels under the icy planet that they've apparently Roger Corby's been living in for 5 years. And they don't really ask him over the radio why he has not responded to any other hails, which seems like an oversight.
We know that particular point is never cleared up.
So it's unclear why he does not do that. But I guess we could, in my headcanon, he's concerned about these momentous discoveries he's made. And he doesn't want, you know, the frightened public to reject it. So I guess maybe he didn't think the other expeditions were ready for his genius, is what I'll say, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Because they could have written it such that he says, you know, leave me alone. And then he only agrees for them to beam down when Nurse Chapel, it appears that Nurse Chapel's mm-hmm. there. Right. And that would have kind of explained
that. Sense.
But they didn't do that.
Yeah. Although, except he really just wants, it seems like his ultimate goal is to get a ship to get off of there so he can start turning everybody in the galaxy into
androids. So yeah, he should have just taken his first opportunity.
Right.
I don't understand. Maybe he didn't know how to use, Rock hadn't taught him how to use the android turntable yet. I don't know. But we'll get to that too.
Totally how androids are made.
That's right. So they beam down. He's not there for some reason, which is also not explained. There are a lot of weird, I mean, I like this episode. Don't get me wrong. I think it's really good. There's just a lot of weird choices that they make. Like he beams down and for no apparent reason, he's not there. Roger Corby's not waiting for them. So they're like, gee, where is he? We don't know. Captain Kirk gets a little anxious. So he says, hey, beam down to red shirts to protect us. And so they do. And then he says, you, red shirt number one, you stay here. Red shirt number two, come with us. We're looking for Roger Corby. I guess he had the one guy stay there in case Roger Corby showed up and they could tell him. I don't know. I didn't quite understand why he had one guy stay, but he did. And so off they go to find Roger Corby. Red shirt number one falls off a cliff, basically, into a bottomless hole, we're told.
pushed by Rook, right?
That's right. He is pushed because he gets separated and Rook pushes him. Also, spoiler alert, Rook kills the other red shirt as well.
A little later, yeah.
Yes, not at the same time. Nurse Chapel almost falls down. It's in kind of a little foreshadowing. And then Rook pushes the other dude down when Kirk and Nurse Chapel are talking to Brownie, who is Dr. Brown, Dr. Corby's assistant.
Heck of a job. Heck of a job, Brownie.
He does a heck of a job. I was going to make that joke. You beat me to it.
That's what I'm here for. I'm ruining everything.
And no, so this is weird. So tell me, maybe I am just reading into this. So when they're talking to Dr. Corby and Nurse Chapel talks to him, there is the hesitation as though he does not know who she is. And then
Brown?
Well, no, but Dr. Corby, he doesn't seem to know who she is. And for like a second, there's a delay. And then he realizes who she is.
Well, yeah, it's like he doesn't see her or something. I think it's supposed... I get the feeling like he's not supposed to see her. And then all of a sudden he sees her.
Oh, you mean Dr. Brown?
It's just like, it seems like there's some weird, like a bad blocking problem
instead of him not know, like
they were trying to do with his mental state,
deteriorated android brain or something. Yeah. So
because that's what one of my notes is for, you know, things that are basically computers, they seem to forget a lot.
It's exactly.
Very strange.
Maybe they have a hard time with their memory banks and accessing.
Yeah, I guess it must be something. Yeah, must be something about that.
Yeah, because Brownie does not seem to recognize her.
Brown supposedly does not recognize her at first,
and then
he's like, "Oh, Christine."
And I thought it was that episode. I don't remember the name of the episode, but where what's the one with Mudd's women? I think when they're a whole bunch of androids that have the flashing necklaces. Mm-hmm. And they overload the system because that's how they talk to each other. And that's how Captain Kirk destroys those robots.
Oh, that one's iMud.
Ima, there you go.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe it's a similar thing where they're trying to access like remote data banks.
It's very clear. I think it's very clear that the writers on this show know nothing about robotics.
Well, this is as Monty
and
Ashley
and computers.
Monty Ashley points out he's not sure that Star Trek writers had ever even used a computer or knew what they were.
They probably hadn't.
Because the computer interactions on this show are very strange.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dr. Brown doesn't know who Nurse Chapel is until he does. And then he's like, oh, hey, Dr. Corby was busy, so he sent me, which is weird. He's off doing something, so he sent me, let's go. And then this is where Rook pushes the dude into the pit, and Brownie is like, oh, he's dead. And you're like, whoa, a little, once again.
He's not terribly sensitive.
He doesn't have good bedside manner for a doctor.
Yeah.
Captain Kirk's like, well, maybe there's a ledge. And he's like, nope, no ledges. It's bottomless.
It's bottomless.
Totally dead.
You'd think that Kirk would look at him and say, you know, that's not really a thing, right? There's no...
Technically, there has to be a bottom. But he's dead. We never think of him again. Well, that's not true. I guess it's mentioned that he's dead. But nobody seems super upset. Honestly,
no. Nobody knew that guy.
No, who cares? He was new. Yeah. He's a new recruit. Mm-hmm. So in they go, and they walk through diamond shaped doors, which are kind of exciting, into like a rec room with a nice little rug. It ties the whole room together. And there's Dr. Corby. Not only is there Dr. Corby, who Nurse Chapel's quite excited about, they kiss, but they meet Andrea. Or Andrea? Is it Andrea or Andrea? I don't know. One of those.
I think it's, yeah. I feel like it's Andrea, but I actually don't remember.
She is, and in a funny tidbit on Memory Alpha, it said the costume designer designed her costume to highlight her contours.
You don't say.
And I thought, oh, really? I'm glad I read this. I had no idea. I will say she is a beautiful woman. There's not much costume to that costume.
No. As a younger person, it was, watching this in my early teens, one of my favorite costumes, I think, that and the one that the woman wears in the one with Apollo. That one in particular stuck in my memory for, unlike the androids, I don't have any problem, pulling both of those numbers.
And I will say, I'm always surprised at how small some of these costumes are. Mm-hmm. And I was watching this in the gym, so kind of a public space. And I mean, it's not inappropriate, I don't think, but it's kind of bordering on inappropriate. And so I was like, I hope nobody sees these scenes where, you know, Captain Kirk is kind of not cuddling her. He kind of grabs her a couple times.
Yeah, he's a little
He's a little
creepy.
Handsy, that mm-hmm. Captain Kirk. But she's there. She's like, hey, what up, everybody? And Nurse Chapel, of course.
Well, Kirk starts to indicate that he's going to go back, right?
Oh,
he's
that's
gonna
right.
Call, he's going to call yeah, the yeah. ship.
Kirk is like, one of my crew members is dead. I need to call the ship. Right. Just to let them know I'm here. And Dr. Corby's like, no, you can't do that. And Dr. Brown says, you really can't do that. And he takes out a little pistol. And that is when he gets shot. Because there's a struggle, and Captain Kirk shoots Dr. Brown, and we find out Dr. Brown is an android.
Dun, dun, dun.
The first of several androids we meet, or who is uncovered. I guess Rook is the first android we meet, who is also an android. Spoiler alert, Andrea.
Well, he comes in. Well, yeah, we, the audience, meet him first, right? Yeah,
yes.
But then he comes in rushing into the room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Andrea is also an android, and I'm good at the big plot twist. I'm just going to ruin it right now. Dr. Corby, also an android. Everybody's an android.
All the way down.
And there's a Captain Kirk android later. This there's a lot of androids in this episode. They're easy to make, apparently. So Andrea
this
is,
takes a few, you know, couple minutes.
A couple minutes at a turntable and like some silly putty. And you got yourself an android. And so Nurse Chapel, once Dr. Brown, it has been revealed, was an android and is dead. No one really cares. Once again, that Dr. Brown, the android, is dead. But I guess they can repair him, theoretically. We figure Andrea's an android. And, of course, Nurse Chapel jumps to the only logical conclusion that Roger Corby has created himself a sex android. because it is totally what one would think. You're stuck on a planet for 5 years by yourself. Right. But he assures her that that is not the case in kind of the weakest way possible.
Yeah, right. He just says he couldn't love her. That's what right. He says.
He says, I couldn't love her. And then he makes her kiss Captain Kirk to prove that she's not a sex android, which seems like
proving
the opposite.
Doing the opposite. Yeah.
Yes. Like, look, she will do anything I tell her.
Doesn't that? Well, anyway, look, I don't want to get into it.
We got a lot of things to cover. Let's go. So she smacks Captain Kirk because Corby tells her to, and that's supposed to prove that she has no feelings. I don't know. It's very strange.
I feel like as a kid, like that kind of somehow that made sense. Like, she was doing both without any emotion.
She switches
just
very
responding
quickly. She'll kiss. She'll smack.
But I did feel like watching it this past time. Like I don't even know what this is supposed to mean.
It seems like a bad argument, Dr. Corby. That's all I'm saying. I believe you, but your argument not that great. And Ruck comes in, and now this is when we realize that he is also an android, and he picks up Captain Kirk and throws him. And I will say, I have always loved Ruck's costume.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it or why he's wearing it, but I love it.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, one thing that struck me about that particular scene was that it really seemed like he just picked him. He picked Shatner up.
Yes, I think he did.
And I think there's a cut, and then he throws him.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume he's not throwing Shatner. He's probably throwing some other guy, because then they pan left and then you see Shatner recover, basically probably, you know, the stuntman got out of the way and Shatner lay down
and got up
and they kept the continuity. But it seemed really like, what's his name? Ted Cassidy picked that, just like lifted that guy right up.
Yes. And it,
whether it was Shatner or not, just hurled him.
And with no, like he was just picking up like
a feather
or something. It's like, whoop, I'm just going to pick you up. It's very impressive. And he's a large, well, he's dead, but he was a large man. And Ruck is, we don't get much of a character behind Ruck, but he's striking. And an interesting thing, right? We find out that he was built by the old ones. He doesn't remember how long ago, because once again, androids have bad memories, apparently. But he was there. The rest died, but he's been left to maintain the machinery for untold centuries until Dr. Corby and Brownie, or maybe not Brownie. I don't know. It is unclear if Brownie, the android, mm-hmm. is based on Dr. Brown, the man, or if he was just built to keep Corby company. I don't know.
Yeah.
But either way, Corby found Ruck and somehow convinced Ruck to let him hang out and programmed Ruck to protect him, which is why Ruck killed the two red shirts. And he explains this to Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk, not really a fan of this. but Corby's like, well, I'll prove that everything's cool. I'll tell Ruck to follow Nurse Chapel's orders, or not to hurt Nurse Chapel. And then Captain Kirk says, oh, also have him follow her orders. And he's like, okay, fine. And so Ruck follow Nurse Chapel's orders, which you think is foreshadowing of some kind.
Yeah.
But it
doesn't really. Nothing happens.
No, nothing happens at all with that. And so now it is clear Dr. Corby's a little crazy. He won't let Captain Kirk beam up. He won't let him talk to the Enterprise. And, he's basically a prisoner because Dr. Corby wants to show him something. And we don't know what. And this is very strange because he's like, I'll show you. And then there's a cut and suddenly Captain Kirk is naked on a turntable.
Right. Yeah. Right. That seemed like a pretty big jump right there.
Yes.
It's like it wasn't really like there's no diagram or anything. There's no like we're gonna tour the manufacturing facility here. It's just like nope. We're making a Kirk android. We're going right to it.
That's right. We don't have the time. You spent so much time walking in those corridors.
Yeah, really. Well, it took them 4 hours to get down. Get down to where the androids are made.
That's true. And so apparently, the way that androids are made is you get yourself a giant turntable, You get yourself a naked person, I assume. I don't know why you have to be naked, but Captain Kirk is naked, so I'm assuming you have to be naked. And you get yourself a ruck who can carry like a weird gelatinous mannequin and strap that into the other side of the turntable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get yourself a bunch of switches and knobs and two androids to man that. They turn a bunch of stuff. The turntable speeds up. At some point, the gelatinous goo turns into the person on the other side. And then you have two copies right down to their neural pathways are synchronized memories. And apparently, if you move a couple of pegs in a pegboard and start the process again, you can transfer consciousness from the android, the person to the android. It's crazy.
Well, if you know of a better way to make androids, I'd like to hear it.
It seems rather effective, so who am I to misjudge this method?
But it doesn't. But it doesn't go perfectly.
It does not, because Captain Kirk, is clever. He thinks,
and kind of, you know, having been somewhat slightly stupid up until this point, a couple of times maybe, but yes. Very clever of him to pick up on the fact that they were doing the mental transfer, mm-hmm. and that was the time to think something that he would not normally think.
Yes, he called
or say something.
He repeats to himself.
Created an emotion in himself that was out of the ordinary, so that the android would not be a perfect copy.
That's right, and this strikes me as a perfect Kirkian solution to a ridiculous problem that he finds himself in. Because basically he thinks of calling, you know, I'm sick of your interference, Spock, you Vulcan
half-breed.
Your
half-breed interference.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And he repeats that self to himself twice, apparently, which is enough to completely write the neuropathways on an exact copy of himself to make him a jerk to Spock, despite their deep friendship. But we won't... You know, it's effective, so we won't dwell on that.
Yeah, no, I think it's okay. I mean, you know, I quibble more with the process of making the android, but
and then there's a scene. So then now you got two Captain Kirks, Nurse Chapel's freaking out, Captain Kirk's freaking out, everybody's freaking out. But it's time for lunch, so off we go to our lunch of carrots and green blocks. Apparently, I don't know what's going on. And so
I always think of it as that stuff that it's some sort of styrofoamy stuff, like the things that they stick flowers in.
Probably.
You rarely see them eating any of that.
Yeah, no. I think someone eats a carrot maybe in this one.
Okay.
A Nurse Chapel is, you know, chilling, and in walks Captain Kirk, and they have a nice little conversation. And she's like, you know, I don't know what to do. And Captain Kirk's like, if I gave you an order, would you betray Corby? And she's like, please don't make me do that. And then that's when Captain Kirk pushes. She says, oh, I can't eat this. And Captain Kirk says, androids don't need to eat. It was the android all along.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which just seems kind of like a jerk move on Corby's part.
Right. I mean, you know, he already showed the android like looking and talking like Kirk. I don't think it really was necessary, but
no, but he does.
And I guess it sort of
he likes to show off
out the
his androids. I don't know.
I think there is some sort of, you're supposed to get the idea, I think, that he's testing her.
Mm-hmm.
But just, nothing comes of that.
Right. Either. This is another thing where he never is really asked to. She's not asked to betray him in any way, really.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. And then in walks Captain Kirk, the real Captain Kirk, with Corby. And you know it's the real Captain Kirk because he's wearing a different outfit, I guess. I don't know.
He's wearing the male version of the Andrea outfit, which covers the entire body.
Which covers, yes, exactly. which
he's wearing one of Brownie's old outfits.
That's true. They have a whole bunch. And this is where we find out that what the plan is, right? That Corby wants to basically find a planet along the way, along the Enterprise's route, so they don't have to go out of their way, and basically turn all of those people that are on that planet into androids. Captain Kirk, not a big fan of this, to say the least. This is when... so they send up the android Captain Kirk to get the itinerary of the Enterprise, which he does rather easily, but he calls Spock a half-breed, and then he leaves. Spock is like, that ain't right.
Spock picks up on it pretty quick. It is pretty obvious. However, it's a very short interaction.
It is ridiculously short, although effective, because he's like, Spock is like, hey, Captain, I want to talk to you. And Captain Kirk is like, I'm sick of your half-breed interference.
He flies off the handle at him.
And then Spock is like, what? And Captain Kirk's like, what? What's the problem? In like the normal tone of voice again. And mm-hmm. you're like, that's strange.
Don't I always talk to you this way?
Don't I always do that? And so Spock, being Spock, says, something's up. We will wait for Captain Kirk to beam down. And then we'll beam down and follow him. And that is what they do. The real Captain Kirk, of course, will not just sit idly by. So he escapes to do something. We don't know what. He like unravels the chair that he's on and chokes Corby with a
yeah, it's
rope.
Another like ridiculous Kirk. Because that chair is, first of all, the side of the chair that he's unraveling, that rope that's on there, that's obviously purely decorative,
mm-hmm.
Because it's not holding the chair together.
No.
He unravels it on the side that Andrea and I think Rook are standing. Or maybe the android. I don't even. But like, there are people standing on that side, and they don't seem to notice him with his hand down there, like unraveling the rope.
And it takes a while to unravel that rope.
Yeah.
And I feel like we see the entire thing. there are some moments that I thought this episode dragged, but not too many. But Captain Kirk does it. He's got the rope. Everyone apparently is very concerned about this. It seems like a lame escape, but he does. He escapes. He throws Roger Corby down, and Ruck goes off to chase after him. And I guess I skipped over the part where Roger Corby, in order to impress everybody with Ruck, has Ruck impersonate everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a party trick that Ruck does. I don't know. it's very strange.
Well, yeah. And it's basically that's just there to set up the thing that happens later.
Right, which was the Captain Kirk is off and running.
Right.
Ruck uses Nurse Chapel's voice to try and lure Captain Kirk back. But Captain Kirk, being the clever man that he is, knows that Ruck is doing that, takes a interestingly shaped piece of rock and attempts to hit Ruck with it. It fails, which I am kind of glad that it does, because normally Captain Kirk would just beat the heck out of this guy, but Ruck is gigantic and an android. It doesn't go well for Ruck. For Captain Kirk. He almost falls down, but then Ruck, for some reason, decides to save him. It is unclear why. I guess maybe because Nurse Chapel was yelling,
yeah, I don't know.
Don't harm him.
Yeah, that's
him.
True.
I don't know.
Yeah, could have been that.
But he saves him. This is when we find out that Ruck and his brethren killed all the old ones because they were illogical, and Captain Kirk wants him to kill Corby. Ruck is like, okay, that makes great sense. You completely convinced me, Captain Kirk. Let's go kill Corby. So off they go to kill Corby. Corby, not having any of it, kills Ruck like in 2 seconds. And there's a confrontation, and Corby's hand gets a cut, or his skin is kind of torn off, and that's when we find out that he has a robot hand, which could be. You know, they assume that he's an android, but it could have been like mm-hmm. a Luke Skywalker thing where he just has a cybernetic hand. But he apparently is an android.
Yeah, and I was never clear if because they say they transfer his mind into the body, I think. Something mm-hmm. I can't remember which word they use specifically, but I was never completely clear whether or not they were taking the brain, like the whole brain, and putting it in, or just like transferring thoughts and memories.
I think Corby, when they are spinning Captain Kirk around, say that they could, if they continue to do that, they could transfer his consciousness.
Transfer everything. Yeah. So I think it's probably just like they are not moving the physical brain.
Right. No, I think the brain abides.
Doesn't seem like that's a real copy. I mean, like, you know, that's like you're still alive. So if you die, you're dead.
Well, that's true. Well, we don't see them transfer a consciousness. So I don't know if the physical, like the biological version, would die without a consciousness, mm-hmm. or if they just are they transferring it or copying it is the question.
Yeah.
And it is unclear. But this is where we find the backstory that Corby had beamed out, or his expedition had gone horribly wrong. His legs had frozen off, apparently. He was just a brain. And somehow, I guess we're led to believe Ruk transfers him into an android body, I guess. It's unclear.
So. Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. And he wants to, you know, rid the universe of
first humans. Thing he does is make Andrea.
and he makes Andrea. And Andrea comes in and she's very upset. And Captain Kirk has another Kirkian solution. He has successfully seduced an android who has no emotions.
not the last one he seduces.
And so it confuses her, and she can't follow Dr. Corby's orders because Captain Kirk has seduced her and made her feel emotions. And then she runs to Corby and tries to kiss him, but Corby decides that instead of kissing him, he'd rather destroy both of them, and they both die. Chapel.
She kills the Kirk android before.
Oh, that's right. She killed the Kirk android because she wanted to make out with Kirk.
She tries to make out with him because she thinks it's Kirk, even though they switch clothes.
Right. And it's clearly not Kirk.
The audience knows it's not Kirk, but she somehow Andrea doesn't pick up on that.
No. And he says, I do like that Kirk when she's like, hey, let's make out. He says, no, it's illogical. And he has like this very kind of slashing hand motion that I enjoy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
and he she ceases to exist to him. And then she's like, oh, yeah, you're not going to make out with me. And she kills him.
That's what you take.
That's what happens when you don't make out with an android who mm-hmm. heretofore had no emotions. So let that be a lesson to you, people listening to this podcast. We've all learned a valuable lesson. Nurse Chapel doesn't get a whole lot of support here. She has gone through a bunch of shocks in that she has found out that her fiancé is dead, but turned into an android replica who then is killed in front of her. And then they beam up.
Right.
Spock arrives. He finds them. They beam back up to the Enterprise. Nurse Chapel has decided, I'm going to stay on the Enterprise. Why she wouldn't stay on the Enterprise? I guess because she was only there to find Corby. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems weird. And then we have a little witty repartee between Spock and Kirk where Spock says, I didn't appreciate half-breed. The half-breed thing.
And Kirk, a little over the top there, Captain.
Kirk says, I'll remember that for the next time I need to implant my memories on an android so that you will respond appropriately.
Yeah.
Which pretty much happens again. Yeah. So
so she had been in a few episodes before this. So I guess they just at some point decided to do this as a backstory. And I mean, I don't know if this is Gene Roddenberry saying my girlfriend needs to get more time on this show.
Memory Alpha tells me they wrote this, but in the original script, there was like a socialite named Margot who hired the Enterprise.
Right.
Which doesn't really make any sense. So Gene Roddenberry probably said, that doesn't make any sense. Plus, mm-hmm. my girlfriend needs to be in this episode.
I have a better idea.
That's right. So let me rewrite this completely, which I understand he did fairly frequently.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And there's several, like, I mean, I'm kind of amazed at the fact that there are only three seasons of this show, and yet they reuse a lot of like things. Mm-hmm. Not, I mean, they obviously also reuse props, but I mean, like androids.
Yep.
Get used a number of times. Kirk falls in love with an android at some point, so Kirk has a, you know, like much like, well, it's a different relationship with that android than with Andrea, but still, you know, we get to see Captain Kirk make out with an android.
Mm-hmm.
The Kirk double,
yes,
also reused in another
mm-hmm.
another episode, which was actually like not that, I think was like just a few episodes earlier. Yeah,
yeah. Is that Turnabout Intruder?
I think an air. Yeah, the enemy isn't it the enemy within.
The enemy within. Yeah, yeah.
It's like two episodes prior as they went by air date.
They seem to, I guess, early episode, they didn't have a lot of
ideas.
So they're like, let's have duplicates of, and Captain Kirk will kiss an android.
Yeah.
Although I do think, as I think more about Captain Kirk, I think he just loves being in love because he falls in love super fast.
So Requiem for Methuselah is the other one where he falls in love with an android. And they beam down and they say, we need this medicine, and we need it within like 3 hours.
And so, and they're constantly updating the time that's left in that 3 hours. And yet in that 3 hours, he completely falls in love with his android.
He's just looking for love. He wants
in
a connection.
All the wrong places.
That's yeah. right. It's unfortunate. Captain
and
Kirk.
Too many android faces.
So what did you think of this episode overall, John?
I still like, I mean, it's got problems, but it's one of, I mean, it's a good one. I mean, it's, I think it's, you know, of the good and the bad, this is a good one. And a few of the things, it's kind of it's a very Twilight Zone kind of feel mm-hmm. in this, because, and I don't get that sense from too many episodes of series that come after the original series. They didn't do a lot of Twilight Zone-y stuff.
Right. There's not a lot of big twists or kind of like creeping horror twists, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this seems to have that sort of vibe. And then the other thing I think is, I mean, Ted Cassidy is actually great in this.
Oh, yeah. Ruck is fantastic.
And so is the guy who plays Roger Corby. But Ted Cassidy is such a, he's such a presence, obviously, physically, but and his voice is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he just... he sells this episode. I mean, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense that he's the only one who looks like he looks and the other ones don't. I mean, you know, I guess that he was the only one left and then Corby made two that look like regular humans. But it's still weird that, you know, here's this anachronism that we have.
Right. And there's only one of them.
And happens to be this giant.
This, yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess he
supposedly looks like the old, yeah, but it's, yeah, it works super well. And I think there's like some kooky anecdote in the Memory Alpha article about him being dressed up like that and then some clothes salesman coming to visit Gene Roddenberry, and Gene had, you know, had Ted Cassidy stand in for him or something and freak this guy out,
right, to see if he was as
but I can see how ominous. It would, I mean, if you watched,
yeah, I don't know how tall Ted Cassidy is, but he looks
6'9".
Well,
six,
that would
nine.
Do it.
I looked it up.
He is a big man. I mean, it's great. And I think you're right, without Ruck it would not be as good.
No,
and he is, you know, there's some people that have a look about them that is, you know, a touch of alien. And Ted Cassidy,
mm-hmm.
just because of his size and certainly with the makeup, but even without the makeup, he kind of has an otherworldly look. And so it is a very effective. And I do think, you know, Roger Corby is a more understated performance and character, but he does a very good job of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I quite buy the relationship between Corby and Nurse Chapel, there's not much of a spark there, but you could argue that it's because we don't know this, but Corby's an android, so he doesn't have feelings. So,
yeah. Although, she's given hardly anything to do in this.
I mean, yeah.
She's there and she says a lot of things, but she doesn't do anything.
She doesn't do anything at all. No, she is the reason.
It's like she doesn't
steal.
She doesn't steal a phaser or a communicator, or like she has no actions other than standing there and mooning over Corby and worrying about stuff.
Yes. And eating lunch.
well, not eating lunch.
But she can't because she's so upset. Yeah, right. She can't eat lunch. Yeah, they're, but even despite all that, and I know we spent, you know, 45 minutes talking about perhaps the things that don't work in this episode, but overall I think it does as a whole works really well. I would recommend people watch. I mean, hopefully they watch it before listening to this if you've never seen it before,
right.
Because we've ruined
right,
the
we've ruined it
twist, right. But I do think it's effective, and I think that I would be interested to know if someone watching this for the first time was surprised that Corby was an android or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen it so many times that I don't even remember the first time I saw it. So
it's now part of who I am.
Right, exactly. I
just
know,
expecting that somebody who has androids is also an android themselves.
Exactly. It is always the way. Well, I know something, John Waltz, you are not an android.
Thank you. Well, I don't have any androids either, so
well. See,
know.
There you go. Story checks
I think
out.
I'm not under suspicion, generally speaking.
But thank you for joining me and talking about this episode.
Thank you. I was thrilled to be on.